Go. Hi guys, Andre Harrison here. Welcome to episode 7 of the Motorsport 101 podcast here on iTunes and Harrison101.com. Hopefully we'll have a good show for you. It's one of those things where I've been, you know, it's a little bit of a struggle to try and come up with real episode ideas because we're in the middle of an F1 off season. As my phone goes off in the background, that's wonderful. Thanks, Hannah. obviously, you know, we're struggling a little bit for show ideas a little bit, but I've got a couple of things planned between now and the new season. Obviously, it's a little bit of a while till testing rolls up again in Jerez, and, you know, MotoGP's got their testing in Sepang, and, you know, that's going to be worth talking about in a bit, but I've got one more idea for a show between now and then. King knows what it is, and it's the perfect platform for his hipsterisms. Speaking of which, he is here, so hello, King.
Yeah, hey.
How you doing, sir?
Great. Like I always say, it's great to be here.
It is indeed. Busy celebrating Jenson Button's birthday?
No, mourning every day that Formula One doesn't have Kevin Magnussen on the grid.
Oh, dear. There's got to be somebody, right?
Yes.
Somebody must mourn for Magnussen.
I mourn for Denmark.
I'm mourning for Denmark. It's a sad day for FizzyFan91 out there. For those YouTubers, you know who I'm talking about. A couple of things to get out of the way real quick. I'll be back to making videos properly again in the next week or so. I'm enjoying my 2-week end of semester break, so hopefully I'll be back to normal kind of uploading times, hopefully, if all things work out where that's concerned. So that's definitely a positive. Also, if you haven't seen already, I'm now actually a colour commentator, believe it or not. I'm commentating on the AOR iRacing League, the Star Mazda Championship they've got going on over there. If you haven't seen it already, check it out on FizzyFan91's channel or the Kraken's channel. The Kraken gets every round. My fellow co-host on the show now and again. We'll be bringing back the Kraken soon, so fans of gay anime girls, you're in luck. if you haven't already, check it out. It's a great series. Kraken does a brilliant job on the editing. I just fill in the blanks, basically. So if you haven't already, go check it out on FizzyFan91's channel and on the Kraken's channel. Both great series. I'm very proud to be a part of. Right, talking about this week's show. A lot of stuff going down on this one. We got Kurt Busch and what might be the most ridiculous domestic violence trial story you will ever hear about in your life. Some of the things that have been said or dished out already regarding Kurt Busch and his ex-girlfriend in this domestic violence case, you have to see to believe, quite frankly. It's unbelievable. Going back to actual Formula One news, on the other, we've got a little bit of news to get through. We've got Mauritius and their new talk of a bailout plan. We have a development in the Honda development story when it comes to their engines, and they actually are allowed to develop. Sort of. It's not quite clear-cut, as with most things in Formula 1, and there's a little bit of Politics 101 in here as well, because that's the fun stuff in Formula 1. So we'll talk about that a little bit. The Nürburgring seems to have run out of money, and they're no longer going to be running the German Grand Prix, at least for a little while yet. The rotation deal they currently have with Hockenheim is dead, so we'll be talking about that later, as the German Grand Prix stays at the Hockenheim Ring for the first time for a little while. And we got a whole heap of your questions you've put through to me and Ryan. So you guys clearly like the idea of watching a squirm on a podcast. So we'll be getting through some of those in the second half of the show. So let's get cracking with episode 7 of the Motorsport 101 podcast. And let's start up with Honda. I'm changing it up from the original recording. I was going to start with Mauritius first, but we're going to talk about Honda first. It turns out the FIA have kind of changed their minds a little bit and have actually allowed Honda to be able to develop in season, King.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not shocked. Of course, FIA was put into like a horrible position when they allowed the loophole to just stay, and then the current manufacturers are allowed to develop in season. Then you have Honda coming in, they're not allowed to develop in season. Something had to give, and I'm pretty sure they're not going to be like, we're closing the loophole.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, you know, If they closed the loophole, there'd be a lot more controversy and talk about the FIA, basically, than what it is now. And I always thought they'd give Honda some kind of squeeze. I just wasn't sure what it was going to be. So if I've got this right here, whatever the big three manufacturers, so that's Ferrari, Mercedes, and Renault, whatever development tokens they have left over after the Hollow Negation date, the February 28th deadline, whatever is left over, the average of that Honda are allowed to use this year. Is that right? Is that about right?
Yeah, the average of the three, that's the amount that they're allowed to use.
Now, so, if you haven't already worked that out, that comes with a bit of a problem. Because the teams are well within their rights to use all, was it 32 of their token limit?
Yes,
year?
All 32.
All 32. There's no reason why a team could not use all 32 of their upgrade points this year, before the date, and basically give Honda absolutely zero to work with.
Yes, it would basically require all the teams to use all of them for Honda at zero, but just one would effectively half whatever Honda's going to get.
Exactly. So obviously the maximum they could get would be 32. And if one team has zero, the maximum they could possibly get would be 64 divided by 3. So you're looking at, what, just over 20? So you're looking at, yeah, basically you'd be nearly half in their total if one team uses their full allowance before February 28th. So we could easily see a kind of mob shakedown situation here where the other teams could come together and say, well, we don't like this Honda chap very much. You hold him down, I'll drill into his kneecaps. And essentially stop Honda from being able to develop at all if they really wanted to.
Yeah, I know. Initially, before they announced that they were going to change the rules for Honda, that Mercedes announced that they were just going to use the 2014 engine in Melbourne. And then things quickly changed.
I wonder what changed their minds on that one. Why would Mercedes suddenly change their mind and say they were going to develop their engines further in the first place? Why else would they change their minds, I wonder?
Yeah, because not developing at all, that greatly increases Honda's tokens.
Exactly, so, you know, you're basically giving, if you choose to run with your old engines, you're essentially giving Honda like 10 free tokens to play with here. So it's a situation where Mercedes know very well what they're doing here. So they're going to go over the strike while the iron is still hot strategy to make sure they don't give Honda any sort of window. It depends what Ferrari and Renault do, obviously, but Renault, considering they're desperate to play catch up, I'd expect them to be quite aggressive when it comes to engine development.
Yeah, the teams are caught in a hard place because the FIA have also confirmed that it'll only be 4 engines per car. It won't be 5 like last year.
So an engine, like we mentioned in the last episode, an engine's got to last 5 race weekends now to avoid a penalty, because it's a bigger season, because it's 20 races as opposed to 19 as it stands. And the engines you've got one less engine to play with as well. So, as last season proved, we think we had about 5 guys in the grid that actually have to use like a sixth part of a power unit, just like Sebastian Vettel, Daniel Ricciardo. I think the Lotus boys had to go for a couple as well, and I think Daniel Kvyat had to go through 6 engines as well last year. So we've already seen a situation where last year they struggled to cope with 5. How are they going to handle 4 this year?
I think like it's a little bit easier because they don't have to plan to have a fresh engine ready for the last race, because the last race isn't double points anymore, but there is
ding, ding.
One more race.
Indeed, so you've got 20 races in general, so the average, now you've got to make an engine last on average 5 race weekends, which in itself isn't ideal.
Especially when the front half of the calendar is known for being pretty, well, in pretty environmentally challenging, do I say the least?
Yeah.
You have Bahrain, you have Malaysia.
All the races where you're on the throttle quite a lot, actually, and it's, you know, Bahrain's pretty darn high speed, and Malaysia's got a lot of faster corners, that's going to put a lot of stress on the engines, and you know, Catalonia's got a massive straight. China's got a massive straight. They're on full throttle for 15 straight seconds, basically. Not ideal. Watching that's going to be quite an interesting developing story over the course of the season, I'd wager. But do you think this is a decent compromise, given Honda's situation and how they're in a bit of a hole to begin with?
Hole. I mean, it could be worse. It could be worse.
It could definitely be worse for Honda, I'd say.
But, I mean, they still have time to develop their engine. It's still over a month away till the deadline, and they could change. They could completely redesign their engine if they wanted to. They don't have the time to, but they could.
Indeed. But, you know, it's not a bad idea. I think overall, I think it's a decent compromise. It's not ideal, but I don't think there was ever going to be an ideal compromise here. Like, Honda's fate for this season could very well depend on what the other teams decide to do. And I think the detriment here is that Mercedes are in the dominant position that they're in terms of engine development and where they are. They're clearly quite far ahead of Ferrari and Renault in that department. Mercedes seems to have changed their minds. It seems like they're going to be more aggressive now. And Ferrari and Renault are playing catch-up, so you'd think they'd be a bit more aggressive themselves. So it could be a bit of a not great situation, you know?
Yeah, and the thing is that, surprisingly, even last season when all the teams had access to all the tokens, there were unused tokens.
Yeah, so it's not like even teams went all the way with their development this year. So it could work both ways. But, you know, we'll have to see how that one develops over the course of the year.
Yeah, I mean, based on last year's totals, that one manufacturer had eight tokens left over, another had seven left over, and the third had five left over.
So they weren't using the whole shaboodle, but pretty close to that.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. Let us know what you think as well about that one as well. I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on that. Moving on, Mauritia. Mauritia might not quite be dead and buried just yet. It seems that came through this morning, by the looks of it, that Mauritia have cancelled their auction of all the rest of their assets because apparently there could be an 11th hour deal to save the team and a rescue deal.
Yeah, I mean, I heard the auction was postponed and later cancelled, and apparently there's an interested buyer to buy the rest of the assets left at Mauritia.
So, yeah, essentially they cancelled it because there could be someone to buy out what's left, which, you know, you'd think would be good news for Mauritia, obviously. You know, they're a team that, obviously, you know, a lot of people want to see back. And I know a lot of fans are, you know, clamouring for a return of Mauritia, being an Anglo-British team developed here. You know, that team has been through a hell of a lot. But I'm not entirely, you know, waving the flag and saying, welcome back, Mauritia, here, because I think there's a lot of problems with this.
Yes, this could be, I don't know. This could be, it's not going to be pretty at all. It's going to be sad to look at.
Yeah, like, I'm not keen on this at all, because you got to look at how the grid is at the moment. We have 18 cars confirmed. Well, probably confirmed. I mean, Lotus have yet to confirm their place, but I'm sure they'll be there. There's been no reason to suggest whether they wouldn't be on the grid. So we're looking at 18 cars from 9 different teams. The worst team in the field on paper is Sauber at the moment. Sauber was still way faster than Mauritia on a regular basis, despite the fact that they got outpointed over the course of the year. But for all intents and purposes, Mauritia and Caterham were essentially Formula B last year. They were several seconds off the pace. It's going to look even worse now with no other bottom feeder to contend with, because I don't think Caterham are coming back.
No.
Like, they are a dumpster fire of an F1 team at this point. So, if Mauritia come back, they're going to have a very, very uncompetitive car. They'll be using a 2014 car, I'm sure of that. You know, they might not make the tests in Jerez in February. And on top of that, you've got no factory, because you sold that off to Haas. You've got no factory, you've got no drivers at the moment. That might be an easy problem. They've got no staff.
That's another easy problem. There's always people willing to work in Formula 1.
Of course. But, you know, you've got to get them all functional and working on the car, and it's a lot to put together by March.
Yeah, it's going to be a slow... No, it's going to be a really slow-moving car crash.
Yeah, it's like watching one of those Euro NCAP safety tests, but played at super slow motion. It's like you know what's coming. It doesn't make it any less painful. And honestly, I'm not sure people are really thinking about this and thinking, wait, do we really want to see Marussia back?
Like, the only reason I would like to see Marussia back, because it would be a rolling billboard for everyone out there to see, yeah, this is what happens to small teams in Formula One. Maybe they should get more money.
Yeah, like, that's actually a very good point when you put it like that. Yeah, that would be a walking example of why you need a better revenue sharing system. We've never really spoken about this on the podcast before, because just the whole story about revenue sharing kind of propped up before this show started back in October, November last year, basically. But for all intents and purposes, the top teams get the lion's share of the money, and the top teams do not give a shit about the lesser teams in Formula One. They could not care less. And because, simply put, the bigger teams are not willing to give up their slice of the pie. So, they want to see a sustainable sport. They just don't want to be the ones to pay for it. So that's essentially the problem here. And Marussia is set to get, like, $40 million this year.
Yeah, about that.
If they actually make the grid.
Yeah, if they actually make the grid. If they'll get the money, it'll be enough to cover the debt, and they'll probably be able... I don't even know how far they'll make it into the season. Depends on who the investor is, but they'll have enough to pay off their debt.
So, with Marussia essentially now becoming a walking advert as to why the revenue system is so broken and whatnot, like, what should we be expecting out of them? Like, you have to wonder, could they even make the 107% rule on many of these things, given how uncompetitive they are?
That's the target. That, for Marussia, is completely the target. Because the moment they get just one-tenth behind the 107% rule, all the large teams are just going to appeal to the FIA to have them excluded from the race.
Essentially for safety reasons, right?
Yeah, for safety reasons, but for the big teams, you know, not having them on the race feed.
Yeah, having them on the race feed means they get more advertising money, and they just get a bigger slice of the pie in general, don't they?
Well, more, they're not a billboard out there saying that, yeah, there are slow teams in Formula One because, you know, the big teams are not sharing revenue.
Yeah, so, you know, they'll take some media pressure when it comes to that, but I don't think it's anything that's going to make them lose any sleep at night, you know?
Yeah.
Which is just unfortunate. It's just a really unfortunate situation in general, essentially. And we've mentioned before how the revenue system is ultimately really flawed and whatnot, and how, you know, Marussia being back isn't entirely a good thing at all. And like we mentioned before, they're due about $40 million from getting nothing from the constructors. They're operating with £31 million of debt, so they've got $10 million in the bank, like, right now. But how are they ever going to make a profit?
They're not going to see a profit for not this year. I don't know if ever.
Like, if I'm an investor, where's my return coming from? This is what I don't understand here. It's like, people say, oh, we're in talks with an investor. These investors must have really big egos to think they can be the one to fix this team, because at the moment, like, you kind of have the impression that, for all intents and purposes, if you're at the bottom of the field, you're not going to be making any money. And with some of the bigger teams struggling to make money, how are they going to make money?
Yeah, it's like, compared to the owners that started Caterham and Marussia, Richard Branson and Tony Fernandez, they definitely had big egos coming in.
Oh, for sure. You know what Branson's like. He thinks he's the guy to change everything, you know, and he is Mr. Ambitious.
Yeah.
So, you know, hardly surprising. And Fernandez has got his own hot water to be dealing with at the moment when it comes to some of the ventures he's a part of, but yeah, tragic as that is. But yeah, just overall, I have the impression that, you know, while it's nice to have Marussia back and some more jobs to go around, I can't help but shake the feeling that this is kind of ultimately pointless.
Yeah, it's like, if you're looking for success, You're not going to find it at Marussia.
No. Let's, moving on. Let's talk about the German Grand Prix, and it looks like the Nürburgring, at least for the time being, is out of cash and can't afford to actually run the German Grand Prix this year, because as you know, as you may or may not know, the German Grand Prix is on a rotating system. Every year it swaps between itself and Hockenheim. We had Hockenheim last year, this past season that's just gone by, and it was meant to be the Nürburgring this year, but it turns out the Nürburgring is not on the calendar this year, King. So we're going back to Hockenheim.
Yeah, apparently the new owner, so a Russian billionaire, couldn't come up with an agreement to Bernie to host the race, or come up with the money from the old agreement to host the race, despite the Nürburgring, you know, hosting the World Endurance Championship this year and also the World Touring Car Championship this year.
Yeah, so it's not like it's a unique venue where, you know, there's not a lot going on there. Like, they have a lot of different things and a lot of different pies here. And, you know, it's a popular track. Like, it tends to sell out more often than not whenever they do host something big. The last F1 race down there had 110,000 down there. It was a sellout last year's Nürburgring 2013. So, this comes to me as a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah, I mean, Formula One itself is extremely expensive to host, and there's little to no benefit to actually hosting a Formula One race besides the ticket sales. That's it. That's all anyone gets to keep from hosting a Formula One race, just the ticket sales.
It's like the World Cup, isn't it, in that sense, where like the organizers aren't making the money, it's the governing body that's making the money.
Yeah, I know we're gonna go to this part of motorsport in a bit, but probably when it comes to hosting races, it's for track owners, the best series to host for is NASCAR, because they give you a piece of the TV money.
Ooh, how very generous of them.
Yes.
That's actually pretty cool. Go NASCAR. When it comes to hosting an F1 race, the booking fees for hosting Formula One races, I heard, is for a fact, they go up every single year. And as a counter, many places have to raise ticket prices as a direct result, you know, just to break even. You know, it's essential, you know, basic break even 101 logic here, basically. And Hockenheim got a lot of flack last year for basically charging a ridiculous amount of money on their tickets last year.
Yeah, I mean, yes, you could blame the organizers, but it's kind of Formula One management's fault for charging them so much to host the German Grand Prix.
Yeah, they have to. They have to raise the prices, otherwise they die. It's how any business would work, you know. And you've got to give them that much money to host the race in the first place. The easiest way to, you know, to counter that, and obviously, like you mentioned, the only way you're getting any money, period, is to raise ticket prices. And you know, it's funny because this is the same story to where, like, a couple of days ago, I saw a story saying that the British Grand Prix wants to cheapen their ticket prices, which I thought was What a nice surprise. Britain might not be one of the most ridiculous expensive races to go to anymore.
Yeah.
And they're pushing for a baseline £99 ticket, basically, for the race, where Hockenheim's tickets last year were up in the 400s range just for the race.
Oh, my God.
To put that into perspective, you could take your whole family on holiday to Hungary this year, and it was cheaper. Champions League final tickets were cheaper this year.
Yeah, that's like, going back to NASCAR for a quick second, like, one of the reasons why they give a piece of the TV revenue to the track owners, because NASCAR knows one of the big, it's important to keep your facilities that you go to up to date and state of the art, and for tickets to be cheap enough for there to be a good atmosphere at the event for it to look good on television.
Exactly. And NASCAR audiences are huge. I've seen like 250,000 at NASCAR events sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting smaller and smaller each year for, you know, problems with the economy, but it still looks good on TV.
Of course, it's massive. There's no getting around the fact you've got hundreds of thousands of fans locked out to see oval races, and that's going to look great on television. You know, you'd never want to see empty seats.
Yeah.
You know, and you know that applies to any sport essentially for all intents and purposes. I mean, I was watching the Manchester City versus Arsenal game yesterday, and there was empty seats in the Man City stands for a home game against Arsenal, which you'd think being a big matchup that it'll be a sellout. It wasn't. You know, there was empty seats dotted all over the Etihad. So it makes you wonder. You know, you don't want that in Formula One either. And Hockenheim last year was only half full. They only had about 50,000 fans there in a 110,000 seat facility. So, you know, should they really be going back to the Hockenheim ring, knowing that, you know, right now fans can't afford to go to it?
It's not a question of whether Formula One should go back. It's whether should the circuit owners pay up the money for them to come back.
Yeah, because, like, how are you going to make your money when you're only half filling the place?
Yeah, and it's like the circuit owners are caught in a really hard problem, because for most racing facilities, you only host, like, 4 or 5 events a year, and Formula One's the biggest one of them all.
Yeah, you can't ignore the F1 dollar, essentially, because it's your biggest payday of the year, I'm sure, as well. Even if it's only 4 or 5 events a year, just on name value alone, you'd think Formula One would be top of the pile in terms of money making. So you've got to maximize what you've got, right? You know, you'd think that.
And it's like, the hosting fees are being inflated by, you know, Abu Dhabi, who the only big race they host a year is, you know, their Formula One race, and it's basically being subsidized by the government, so they don't care how much money they burn on it.
Yeah, because the government are flipping the bill for everything, and, you know, their race being worth double points last year as a season finale, I'm guessing they have brought in a few extra fans and whatnot.
Yeah, and you have the Emir of Qatar willing to pay more than anyone else in the calendar just to be a part of it.
It helps. I'm guessing Hockenheim doesn't have that same level of privilege.
Yeah, just some hinky town on the outskirts of Stuttgart wanting to host the German Grand Prix because, you know, they're right in the heart of the German automobile industry.
Indeed. Porsche just down the road, right?
Yeah, Porsche, Mercedes-Benz.
Mm-hmm. And you'd think with a German team or an Anglo-German team in Mercedes leading the way with Nico Rosberg, a German... Well, depends on who you ask, whether he's German or not. But depends. Yeah, having a German driver, you know, essentially leading the championship at that point in time, you'd think there would have been a nice turnout for him. You know, Sebastian Vettel being reigning champion and whatnot as well. I know they're not that popular in terms of, you know, maybe comparing to Michael, but yeesh, just not a good look.
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly down to the ticket prices. If it's for Formula One, there are fans everywhere, and if the tickets are cheap enough, they will show up.
Of course.
And, like, I mean, I want to put this down to probably the dichotomy between races in Europe and races east of Europe, where Malaysia has the cheapest tickets in the calendar because the race is completely subsidized by Petronas, while in Europe most of the races are privately owned and maybe, luckily, get some subsidies from the government to pay down the hosting fees, like the Belgian Grand Prix.
Indeed, because that's such a big deal for Belgium to have that Grand Prix there, and Spa is one of the most prestigious tracks on the calendar, so that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, so you end up with all the government-subsidized races, inflating the hosting fees to the privately-owned tracks like Silverstone and Hockenheim not being able to pay off the fees.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason for that is because Bernie couldn't bear to lose a home Grand Prix for Formula One, which would just be outrageous, basically, for all intents and purposes. And, you know, you're absolutely right. Like, Malaysia is the cheapest on the board. I think it's £20 a head for Malaysia, which is just dirt cheap.
Yeah.
Like, the snooker was more expensive than that over here in London yesterday with that Masters final going on. But, like, yeah, like, some of the tickets are just dirt cheap. And on the other end of the scale, you've got £400 for Germany. Like, I know Silverstone is over £200 for a good ticket over there, a grandstand seat. Silverstone's over £200, and, you know, it's not a good message to send out to the fans. Like, I know motor racing is never a cheap hobby, but I think you're sending out the wrong message if you're charging this kind of price for tickets, you know?
Yeah, I forgot which Formula One journalist. Some Formula One journalist tried to argue that the ticket prices were fair based on the prestige of a Formula One event compared to other world events. And I'm like, no, I think it was Joe Swart.
No.
It shouldn't price effectively like Bernie was trying to take Monza off the calendar. It's like imagining English football without Wembley.
Just wouldn't make any sense, you know? And the prestige shouldn't mean it should be more expensive, quite frankly. And for what it's worth, like, rating an event on prestige is a very subjective thing to do, and there isn't really a real way of comparing the two. So let's ignore the other sporting events and let's just get as many fans in through the door as possible, more than anything else. And if that means flipping the bill a little bit and the FIA taking a little bit of a hit, I think that's probably for the best, because having a major event on the calendar, the German Grand Prix, Germany being the biggest rising country for Formula One success in the last 20 years, and having a half-filled race is never a good look.
Yeah, and it's not a good look, and it being half-filled itself hurts the prestige of Formula One.
Exactly. Like, what F1 race wants to say that, oh, welcome to Formula One, only half our fans go up, we only half fill our seats, where in the same country, football tickets are dirt cheap. Like, Bayern Munich, you can get a whole season ticket for Bayern Munich, arguably the best team in the world, for like less than 100 quid.
Yeah, you can get 3 season tickets for what it costs to go to German Grand Prix.
That's ridiculous! like that's 18 football matches for less than going to the German Grand Prix. That's a joke, quite frankly. And yeah, it just hurts everybody by having empty seats. There's no plus side for anybody. There's no plus side for the organisers. There's none for the sport itself. It's just bad news for everybody involved. So, yeah, you know, hopefully the FIA can, you know, find a way around that.
Yeah.
And hopefully they've got to take some of the bill off the German, because, you know, £400 a ticket is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
I mean, oh, I think it was a short blog post from the former F1 doctor, Charlie Hardstein, where he kind of argued, well, he didn't come up with a proposition. It was more like, why don't the European circuits try to form a cartel to try to, you know, a union to lobby against Formula One management and try to get their rates lower than the newer races on the calendar, because obviously their circuits have been around for almost 90 years now.
And yeah, you know, that's not a bad idea. Like, I like unions on the whole, and I think most of the time they work, but this is Bernie we're talking about here.
Hey, I mean, Let's say Bernie argues, Monza, if you don't pay up, we're gonna drop Monza off the calendar, and Monza replies back, okay, if Monza goes, then Monaco, Silverstone, Spa, Hockenheim, and the Nürburgring are also gonna go.
When you put it like that, it actually sounds like quite a good idea.
Yeah, it puts Bernie in a tough position. It's basically you let Europe have Europe's way, or Europe is going to disappear.
Yeah, and F1 basically becomes a hipster league where you go to all these obscure racetracks all over the world, which isn't in Europe. Like, we're going to Dubai next year, going to the Dubai Autodrome, we're going to go to Bathurst instead, and, you know,
and Azerbaijan for the finale.
Azerbaijan for the series finale. Yeah, triple points, because we've lost viewers. But, you know, that's a good idea in hindsight. But yeah, no Nürburgring, which is kind of a shame. It's just a shame to see another European venue lose out, because that seems to be the trend over the last few years, where the European circuits are fighting amongst themselves and are losing spots, where Bernie seems to be venturing out to more and more obscure places. I mean, 2017, I'm expecting a Grand Prix on the moon.
Yeah, it's like at first it was just arguing, oh, we're trying to spread the sport to more places. No, it's just a straight-up cash grab, because we haven't seen...
It's a cash grab.
We haven't seen any drivers from these places or anything.
Yeah, like, you know, Russia, and, you know, we now have Daniil Kvaat in there, and Sergei Sorokin on Reign in the Rings, basically.
I mean,
and
Russia's justified. They have their own domestic motorsports scene, and before Kvaat, we had Petrov, and
We did. We had Vitaly. He had good money behind him as well.
But places like Azerbaijan makes no sense at all.
Yeah, like, Azerbaijan, why? Oh, was it because they struck oil lately? That may have something to do with it.
And no one wants to admit how big a flop China has been.
Yeah, China is dreadful. China's got to go. Like Shanghai, it's in a part of the world where there's a lot of smog because of all the pollution. It doesn't look very nice. It's not a very good track. It's basically a clone of Malaysia, which is not a good thing. It's got the classic tilt design of it, which isn't particularly great. It's not liked by the fans. It doesn't have a big attendance at all.
Yeah, that complex before the long straight, those seats have never been available for sale since that race has begun.
How? How could that be a thing?
Like, forever, I was like, are there even seats under that tarp with advertising anymore?
It's amazing. How could you basically close off one entire massive grandstand like that for a Grand Prix?
Because
the biggest event you'll have that year.
They thought it was going to be more popular than it actually was.
That's just sad. And of course, we've got Korea as well, which is no longer on the calendar. That was a tremendous bust.
Yeah, it's like, Petronas is actually starting to get tired of the Malaysian Grand Prix and might actually just stop funding it.
Uh-oh. Because Malaysia's one of the cheaper ones, and Malaysia's actually quite well-received.
Yeah, but it's only profitable because Petronas funds it, and now that they're basically on board with Mercedes, and Mercedes has suddenly seen so much success, it's like, why have this race anymore?
Yeah, we don't need it, because we've got a successful team instead, which is probably better than hosting one venue, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that makes sense now I think about it. So, yeah, that's unfortunate for Malaysia, which is one of the cheaper events to go to, and, you know, it's been on the calendar since, 1999, I think, Malaysia? So, you know, it's been around for 15 years now, Malaysia, believe it or not, and that's still one of the more recent ones. So, yeah, that's unfortunate. Yeah. So, yeah, hopefully the track issues get sorted out soon.
Yeah.
Okay, and now for something completely different. Kurt Busch, everybody. NASCAR. And I never thought I'd be talking about NASCAR on this podcast, but it makes for a really funny episode title, My Ex is a Trained Assassin, because, King, explain this domestic violence story, because it's just absolutely ridiculous.
Apparently last season, during the race in Dover, Delaware, Kurt Busch had an altercation in his motorhome with his girlfriend. And apparently in the story, according to her side of the story, Busch grabbed her by her neck and slammed her head against the trailer 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently to Busch's side of the story, Busch just broke up with her.
Oh. Somebody's selling porky pies then.
Yep, and there's no witnesses to this event, so it's basically he said, she said.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the only closest thing to a witness is probably the testimony from a minister who saw Bush's girlfriend after the altercation, where she basically told the minister that she was going to destroy him, and the minister and the minister noted that she did not have any bruises or marks on her.
Interesting. And just to clarify for the record, do you happen to know the nickname of Kurt Busch's girlfriend?
The Pocket Commando.
We are not making any of this up, by the way. This is an absolutely true story. She's called the Pocket Commando, and she's basically, I think she used to be part of the Secret Service or the FBI.
Well, she claims to be a part of the Secret Service. I mean, she claimed to work in intelligence and surveillance fields in her past.
I like that you couldn't even say that while keeping a straight face.
No. And, oh, I mean, She hasn't denied any of Bush's accusations, including one where apparently one night in El Paso, Texas, she went out in camo gear and came back in a trench coat, and under the trench coat was an evening gown splattered with blood and other matter.
Other matter. That's never a good sign, is it?
No.
Like, let's be real here. Kurt Busch has dated a crazy lady.
It's either she's crazy or he's crazy.
Quite frankly, it could be either. It could be both for all we know. I had to mention it because this is just a ridiculous story. A bit of advice, if you haven't already, check out Keith Olbermann's channel on YouTube. He has a really funny video about this where he basically compares the two of them to Mr. and Mrs. Smith, the famous spy film with Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, both basically being spies trying to kill each other. It's ridiculous.
And so, you know, like, Kurt Busch doesn't face any jail time in this case at all. This is over a restraining order.
Yeah, this is not actually a domestic violence case, really. It's more of a restraining order because basically his girlfriend's a bit crazy.
Yes. She filed for a restraining order, and Bush is fighting against it. And it's ridiculous.
Like, why would you want to fight a restraining order if your woman is that crazy and is an ex-girlfriend?
Well, I think on Bush's part, it's more of saving face because, you know, the whole recent events in the NFL with domestic abuse cases, how that can be blown out of proportion. And yeah. I mean, on a side note, there was this other domestic abuse case with the captain of the U.S. women's national team.
Yep, Hope Solo, right?
Yeah, those charges were dropped and never to be seen from again.
Of course.
And I mean, there's still a lot of people that are trying that are just completely horrified that happened.
Yeah, like, the idea of a woman beating up a man, I think, is never going to be taken quite as seriously, because it just doesn't happen as often, really. You know, I think 80% of domestic violence cases are involving men on women. So, having it the other way around, and, you know, Hope Solo being an incredibly athletic athlete as well, you know, and a big face for women's sport over there, it's probably a little bit more of an eyebrow raiser, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, domestic abuse could happen to anyone, anywhere, that's why... Mm-hmm. That's why Kurt Busch is still facing these charges, despite his ex-girlfriend being a trained assassin.
Yeah, he testified under oath, my ex-girlfriend is a trained assassin. Yet he has the charges against him for domestic violence. You'd think, if anything, it would be the other way around.
Like, no. And it's like, no one knows which way this could go. I mean, which way this could go PR-wise for Kurt Busch. He could either go, you know, the Ray Rice route where he's completely out of the league, or he could go the Hope Solo route where it's like, everything's fine, I'm still captain of the national team, nothing really happened.
Yeah, don't worry, nothing really happened. My ex really was a crazy lady. Which makes you wonder, like, I might take the Bomani Jones approach to this one, where essentially he was like, why would you date a woman that crazy?
But it's like, it's not, she's actually attractive, though.
Okay, she's not bad, I'll give you that. Like, this is true, she actually is quite nice looking, but it's like, if you're coming home one day, and she's revealing... evening gown splattered with blood and other bodily matter. Should that not be a red flag to you?
I don't know. To me, that would be a red flag. Me thinking as Kurt Busch, him being, you know, from Nevada, being known as the outlaw.
The crazy southern redneck.
Well, you know, Nevada's not the South. It's like next to California.
Yeah, well, we're not really South, but yeah, there's my American geography kicking in there for you.
The Wild West Outlaw. He was like, he's probably into that.
Oh, yeah, you know what? That actually makes some sense. It's like, well, she's come home covered in horse. I like that. Oh, like why not? You know, they probably started bonking after that. So, yeah, maybe he's just into that. I don't know, but we'll keep you posted on this rather ridiculous story, quite frankly, because it is just it's kind of chilling yet somewhat hilarious all at the same time. So that's actually just quite an amazing story. So check out, like I mentioned, check out Olbermann's video as well on his YouTube channel. If you haven't seen it, it's also very funny where that's concerned. I'm a big fan of Olbermann's content in general, to be honest. So, part American culture, essentially, is being subscribed to Olbermann around the horn and a bunch of other American stuff. So yeah, keep an eye on that. So to fill up the rest of the show, we're going to be talking over your questions. I asked on my Facebook page, at facebook.com/Harrison101HD, shameless plug, to ask me some questions, and me and King will go through them over the course of the rest of this podcast. So yeah, thanks to everybody who sent them in on Facebook and on Twitter. Apologies in advance if I get any of your names wrong. I think looking at them now, I think most of them are pretty straightforward, luckily. There's some funny ones I've gotten now and again, and I'm terrible with pronunciations, so sometimes I struggle. But hopefully we'll get through them. Well, I'm going to go on the Twitter account first for this one, and we're going to ask a couple of questions from Joshua Suttil on Twitter. So hi, Josh, big fan of the show. I know he's told me before, but he's a big fan. So thanks, Josh. The first question is, now Mauricio and Caterham have gone, which team is most under threat? Could we see another team go this year? What do you reckon, Ron?
Lotus. Lotus.
Didn't even hesitate with Lotus.
No. I mean, Lotus has been the team I wanted to see succeed so much over the past 3 years, but just slip backwards. It's just been a slow descent down to being subject to be confirmed for this year.
Yeah, like that's not pretty. And on top of that as well, they've got a lot less championship money to be working with, given how they were fourth the last 2 years and now they were eighth.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've got a lot less to play with as well. And development wise, they were atrocious last year. So. Yeah, it's not a good sign. I personally would say Sauber. I think they've got just as good a chance because Sauber have always struggled when they haven't got the backing of a factory behind them. And they had their worst year ever this past year, finishing 10th in the constructors, not scoring a single point. I've not seen anything to suggest they're going to suddenly climb up the field again next year.
The reason I didn't pick Sauber was because this year they're going to have all that Mexican telecom money coming in.
Ooh, yeah, Telmex and the Bank de Brazil as well, because they've got Felipe Nasa on their team. So maybe they could salvage something with that kind of funding.
Yeah, it's like, it's been confirmed. Lotus will be on the grid this year. They did the crash test and everything. They will be
Hooray.
There. But so, yeah. I don't know if they'll make it to the end.
Yeah, so, you know, make of that what you will, essentially. But, I think Sauber are under a little bit of risk. If they have another season where they're at the back of the field, you'd have to worry about that, because sponsors are not going to chip in for a team that bad, eventually. They'll be thinking, what are we getting out of this here? So make of that what you will, I think. But yeah, Lotus, I think, are another team that definitely are near the bottom. I think that's probably where they're going to be for a little while yet. Question from Danny Brennan, 72. Hi, Danny. He asks, will Daniel Ricciardo be able to fight with the two Mercs if Renault's power unit is up to scratch?
He pretty much answered the question. It's basically down to the Renault power unit.
Yeah, like, that's... Yeah, you kind of answered your own question there, Danny, to be fair. But, because I think aero-wise, many people still think Red Bull is the best in terms of aerodynamics and chassis and whatnot. So they know they've got a decent engineering package underneath them, essentially. We all know Adrian Newey's a genius. We didn't need me to tell you that. And, you know, even though it's going to be his final car this year, for what it's worth, so that's another thing. But if they can fix the power unit problems, then there's no reason why they couldn't contend. I think Williams right now have probably got a little bit more base to be a challenge to Mercedes than Red Bull do at the moment, but we'll have to wait and see where that's concerned.
Yeah, because Pat Simmons admitted that Williams could use a little extra more cash.
They could do, and you know what? Finishing further in the constructors last year will definitely help, to be fair.
Yeah.
So, you know, it kind of goes hand in hand, really. But Williams are a team that are so up and down, you never really know what you're going to get with them. I mean, just look at 2 years ago where they had their worst ever season in terms of points scored. They only scored 5 points in 2013, as opposed to now where they had 320. So, you know, it's a big difference. Next question from Eclipse Luna DA on Twitter. Hi Luna, he asks, what tracks would you like to have on a rotor, like Germany with the Nürburgring and Hockenheim with the current countries involved? So, would you like to see any other circuits rotated in and out every other year?
It'd have to make sense. They would have to be close to each other or in the same country, preferably.
So are there tracks in other countries that are missing out? Maybe America. Like, I wouldn't mind seeing Indianapolis come back.
Yeah, like, America would make the most sense if we're going to have a rotation. Or, like, maybe it could work in Europe if you want to do Austria 1 year, then Hungary the next year.
Yeah, because they are pretty close, aren't they?
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe that could work. But I have no problem with Austria and Hungary being on the calendar together, so... you know, why rotate, you know?
It's like, you could do Italy, but that'd probably be a little controversial.
But what? You're making Monza rotational? How dare you, King?
It's like, hey, Mugello would be a great track.
I agree. I'd have no problem, honestly. I'm not one of those sentimental dudes. So, I'd have no problem making Mugello the Italian Grand Prix over Monza, because I think Mugello is a better track than Monza when it comes to the modern F1 format, because Monza is the nearest F1's going to get to an oval.
Yeah.
And I'm not entirely sure that's the best for Monza. And you know what? The Tifosi will go to Mugello. Have you seen Valentino Rossi and the crowds he pulls in Italy? Like, if they went to Mugello, the Tifosi would follow. I have no doubt on that.
Yeah, like, if I was made FIA president tomorrow, I would tell the FIA, right now, we're going to make Monza rotational unless you bring back the banking.
Damn straight. Now there's some drama. If we're going to go oval, we're going full oval.
Go full, side by side on the front straight. Half the field goes banking, half the field goes to Curva Grande. Make it happen. Make it happen.
Make it happen. That's going to be a thing. Right, we'll go back to Josh's second question in a minute. But let's go on my Facebook page. Let's see. Richard Evans asking a non-F1 question, but we'll let it slide. Who do you think will win the Super Bowl?
Seattle Seahawks.
I'm a New England Patriots fan, but even I am saying the Seattle Seahawks at this point in time. I don't think we've got anything to suggest we're going to beat the Seahawks, to be honest with you. The Seahawks are just ridiculous. They play linebackers at safety, for God's sake.
Richard Sherman's going to show you why he's the best in the game.
Shut up. I'm not condoning endorsements of Richard Sherman on this podcast. Marcus Hoare says, if you were running your own Formula E team, who would you have as drivers? Brackets, has to be guys that aren't currently racing in it.
Ooh. Oh, God. You already locked out my favorite, John Eric Verne. But I guess I'm going to have to go to the man who says he doesn't want to race in Formula E, Sebastian Vettel.
just to troll everybody, have Sebastian Vettel in there.
Yeah, it's like, it's probably just going to be Sebastian Vettel of... Daniel Ricciardo, I guess. Just put Red Bull in there.
Just put Red Bull in Formula E, why not? If it were me, I'm going for the full American dream team of Connor Daly and James Hinchcliffe.
Okay, Hinchcliffe is Canadian.
Oh, whatever. Close enough. We're going to have Stars and Stripes on the livery, and maybe a you could do the split liveries. You could have like one car be American. You could have one car being Canadian. Daly and Hinchcliffe would be awesome to have of the great social media following that Formula E has.
They would.
Daly would be awesome. He'd be RKOing Hinchcliffe out of the car as a victory formation.
Oh my god, they would troll everyone.
It would be amazing. Like, if you're listening to this podcast, how could you not love that? Like, Conor Daly is one of the most entertaining racing drivers in the world today. And this is a man who calls himself the mayor of Hinchtown. How could you not have that in racing?
Oh, God. They would just troll. They would take a picture of a Pirelli tire and be like, hey, guys, we're going to be running the slicks today.
Yeah! Let's go! So yeah, that if I had to choose, I'd be choosing Conor Daly and James Hinchcliffe, because for entertainment value, that would be friggin' amazing. James Francis White asks, if you were a major car company, which motorsport would you choose to run a factory team in?
My heart says Formula One, but my brain says that's just a black hole.
Yeah, that is a black hole where you siphon off your cash, and millions of it too.
It's like, how big is my motor company? Because if it's big enough, I could go into that black hole and be just fine.
Exactly. Like, do you want to be Ferrari, basically, or do you want to not give yourself that kind of ego boost?
Like, right now, I'd probably go GT in the WEC.
That's fair. That's pretty valid. Because I like the up-and-coming wagon, I'd like to give Formula E a shot. I think that's the future, and I think as an up-and-coming series, I think it's making great steps forward already. I mean, if the talk is true that there could be as many as 5 manufacturers next year, that's fantastic news for the series. So I think as an investment, I think that could be one that could pay dividends in the future if you can make a really good Formula E car down the road. So I'd like to get involved in that series. So, moving on. This question, I think, is more directed at me than anything else. Andre Silva asking, what do you expect from Ferrari and Sebastian Vettel? boy. I've got a blog about this coming out in the next couple of days where I talk more personally about this one. Because people still ask me, Dre, why do you support Sebastian Vettel? And, you know, that's an interesting one in its own right, quite frankly. But I'm not expecting much in the short to medium term here. Mercedes are the dominant team. I think they could be for another couple of years yet, unless the FIA changes the rules to try and shaft them like they've done with many other teams in the past. 2017, bitches!
1,000 horsepower, that's when Ferrari comes back.
Yep, 1,000 horsepower V10s in the cars, let's go! I'm not expecting much in the short to medium term. Like, if he can do what Alonso did and basically win the fans over by being a brutal scrapper, and, you know, basically do what Alonso did where he was a good runner-up or third-place runner, like, and praise him for basically doing well in a second or third best car, then I'm happy with that, because that'll end the silly debates I keep hearing on my Ask FM page, where people keep telling me that, oh, Vettel isn't the best, he won in the best car. Shut up!
They wouldn't have signed him if he wasn't the best.
Like, hello, people. Everyone wins in the best car. How many times have I got to tell you people this?
Yeah, it's like, with Sebastian Vettel, I'm actually pretty excited. Like, he's going to show why he's wearing red and not some other guy like Nico Hülkenberg, because he's the best driver in the game.
Wow. I like the way you think. I like the way you think, King. I can't help but endorse this notion. Connor Pink asks, what are your opinions on DTM being watching the 2014 season? I personally enjoy it more than F1. If you do watch, do you support Amador Costa and X-Rom fan being a fellow Red Bull fan? Unfortunately, I don't watch DTM at the moment. Only on very rare occasions, unfortunately. So I'm kind of out of this one. Do you watch, King?
I used to, not anymore. I mean, it's basically Formula One with fenders, to be honest.
That's a good way of putting it.
It's like the Deutsche Tourenwagen Masters, not into it like I used to be. I mean, mainly because Mercedes is basically just there now. They're not that good.
So fair enough. Sorry about that, Connor. We can't really give you a solid answer on that one, unfortunately, because we just don't watch anymore. This one's going to be good for the iTunes censors. Fuck, marry, kill. Jennifer Bex, Natalie Pinkham, or Susie Wolf.
They're so nice people.
I don't want to kill any of these people. They're all lovely. Like, Susie Wolf is the nicest girl in the world. Natalie Pinkham is gorgeous. And Jennifer Bex is just like perfection. As my phone goes off in the background, which is wonderful. But, yeah, like, that's a tough one. That really is.
It's like, oh god, no answer could be good.
Like, I have a feeling like I'd have to like, I'm not sure Jennifer Bex would be a great wife.
Yeah, me either.
So like, I'm thinking I'd marry Susie Wolf. But then which one's more attractive out of Jennifer Bex and Natalie Pinkham? I've got to think
tough
about
decisions,
this.
Tough decisions.
This is one of those things where you're going to immediately feel bad after you do it.
Yeah.
Well, maybe after the killing, maybe not so much the other stuff. Ooh, boy. No, you know what? No. This is like, let's not overthink this. Yeah.
Just go for it. Regret later.
Go for it, regret later. I'm taking Jennifer Bex home with me. Natalie Pinkham, I'm sorry. I know you've just had a baby. That probably isn't helping. Congratulations to Pinks, by the way. That's had a lovely baby boy the other day. Wolfgang, the name and everything. How's that for a name? She must have given in to the husband on that one. But, it's like being in the NFL and you have the number one pick. Let's not overthink this. I'm taking the quarterback. Like, let's not get cute about this.
So just go.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm fucking Jennifer Bex. I am marrying Susie Wolf, and Natalie Pickham's gotta go.
Now I guess it's my turn now.
Yeah.
Sorry, Toto. I'm killing Susie.
Oh, wow. That's a surprise to me.
It's like, I like Susie, but...
The king of the Susie Wolf update is killing his favorite interest.
I'm gonna sleep with Jennifer Bex. I'm gonna marry Natalie Pinkham.
Why are you marrying Pinkham? I've got an explanation for this one.
I mean, she's obviously attractive. She seems to be pretty stable, and also knowledgeable about Formula One. That's good enough for me.
Setting the bar real high for yourself there, hey King.
Hey, Natalie Pinkham is a pretty high bar.
She is a pretty high bar. Like, if you've ever seen the bikini pictures she posts on now and again, damn. Like, she's very hot for a woman of 36. So, we'll leave that one there. One of these days, if I ever make it into Formula 1, this podcast is going to be posted and I'm going to look really friggin' stupid now.
We're both going to look really stupid.
Okay.
Hopefully, they're all retired by then. And, well, Jennifer Bex is already gone, so we don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, that's one way of looking at it, I suppose. Nathan Green asks, how long do you expect Formula 1 to be the top level of four-wheel motorsport, and what replaces it at the top level, example the WEC? I don't see any reason to suggest that F1 will be knocked off its peg anytime soon.
Yeah, Formula 1 will always be Formula 1. It will always be number one. The rules could change drastically, but there will always be Formula 1.
Because people will still watch. Like, people will bitch about everything, but ultimately they will not turn away from their TV channel. So, like, for me, I don't think that's going to get dethroned. I would love the WEC to be up there as well. The problem is their races are just too long, and people are not going to be sitting down there for 6 to 8 hours on end, maybe even longer for Le Mans, for example, to watch that kind of race.
It's like the only form of motorsport that could feasibly overtake Formula One is the World Touring Car Championship. And no, just no.
No, that series is dreadful. It's a terrible series. It endorses terrible driving. But that's a debate for another podcast.
Grand Prix racing has been the pinnacle of motorsport for over a century now. I'm pretty sure they're safe.
Yeah, I think they're okay at this point. I don't think there's any real threat to come up anytime soon, so I think we're okay in that regard. Question from Thomas Wilson. Thomas Wilson asks, if Honda had stayed in F1 instead of pulling out in 2008, how different would this year's championship have been?
It would have been Honda instead of Mercedes, as simple as that.
Yeah, they probably would have won the championship if Honda had found the way to keep putting that kind of money in the pot. They probably would have still been up the top. So, you know, simply put, Mercedes probably would not exist as a factory team if it wasn't for that. They probably would have just stuck with McLaren, more than likely. So, it's hard to say, because obviously you're thinking 6 years down the road here, but Mercedes as a factory team eventually would not exist if it wasn't for Honda pulling out in 2008, because obviously you had Braun buying out the team and then Mercedes becoming the factory team we now know and love today. So,
yeah. I mean, Mercedes did want to enter a factory team, but they wanted to buy out a team because they know starting from scratch isn't going to help anyone.
Mm-hmm. So,
and Ron Dennis was not going to sell any part of McLaren, so...
Exactly, so... Take that for what it's worth, basically. So, last question, and I saved the biggest one for last. Going back to Joshua again, so again, hi Josh. He said, make a super grid of the current 9 teams, but you can only pick drivers who have driven for that team.
Oh, we can only use current teams?
Yeah, so... The current 9 teams on the field... We have to make a grid out of those teams, but we can only pick drivers who have driven for them at some point.
Okay.
So let's start at the top. We'll go Mercedes. Is it obvious here that it's going to be Fangio and Schumacher?
I don't have Fangio on my Mercedes Super Team.
What?
Yeah, I have Rudolph Caracciola and Michael Schumacher.
Of course, you hipster. You're going from drivers before the era of modern F1 we know today.
Yes, because he's arguably the greatest.
Friggin' hipster. okay, so. So, I'm going for the more obvious Fangio-Schumacher pick. King's going Crashiola and Schumacher on that one. So, now we go to the absolutely overwhelming pool of talent that is Red Bull's selection.
Oh, I think Red Bull racing.
So, like, Red Bull, if I'm not mistaken, have only had, like, 6 drivers drive for them ever. So, like you got...
could we choose from the Jaguar pool?
Would that really make a difference? Like, you're basically bringing Eddie Irvine into it, and he wasn't even that good anyway.
He almost won a world championship.
He got lucky! Schumacher broke both his legs!
Hey, it's still almost, though. It's still almost.
Whatever. okay, so if in the Red Bull mold we know today, you've got David Coulthard, Mark Webber, Sebastian Vettel, Daniel Ricciardo, and Daniil Kvyat. You've got 5 guys to pick from.
Well, there's also Christian Kleen.
Oh, shut up. yeah, go on, pick Kleen, yeah. Jeez.
No, well, I'm just going to go... Vettel, Coulthard.
Coulthard over Webber?
Yes.
That's actually quite close, though, I think, about it. Because Coulthard won 13 races.
Yes, and he was pretty good at Monaco.
He was actually pretty good as a driver, DC. Like, I know he's never going to get the credit that guys like Damon Hill have gotten or Mansell or anything like that, but Coulthard was a good driver in his own right. Just a shame he kind of came up in the wrong era, really, more than anything else. You know, he had a superior teammate in Hakkinen for the most part, and Schumacher was Schumacher. Vettel is obviously the one. Do you go with the new boy in Ricciardo? Do you go with Coulthard, or do you go for Webber? I've always thought Webber was overrated. So, yeah, I agree with you. I'm going to take Coulthard on that one. So, yeah, Vettel and DC, I think. You have a lot of fun with that team as well, because those two get along really well. So that would actually be quite entertaining as well, funnily enough. So, Williams. This one's going to be more interesting.
Oh yeah.
A lot of good drivers have come and gone through Williams.
I just know one driver is not going to be on my Williams Super Team.
And who's that going to be?
Jacques Villeneuve.
Oh, yes. Attaboy, King, you know what's up. No room at the inn for Jacques? How dare you?
I'm just thinking, like, I'm just scrolling through the Wikipedia page of the results to see who's on their team, because I don't remember everyone.
Well, let's not ignore the elephant in the room here. Would you take Ayrton Senna?
For Williams, no.
Would you take Alan Prost?
Yes. Wait. No, I'm going to save him.
You're saving Prost. Okay.
Oh, this is pretty difficult, because it's so many people.
Because they've had pretty much every great driver has gone through Williams at some point.
Oh my God!
There's not very many elite drivers who haven't.
Oh, I'm gonna pick Nigel Mansell. Like, I knew it was gonna be Nigel Mansell, but
Mansell was always gonna be one. Mansell was excellent down there. Do you go Damon Hill as your number two?
Yeah, if I'm not picking Jacques, I'm picking Damon Hill.
Yeah, that was a two I had initially. So yeah,
because I'm not going Martin Brundle. Sorry, Brundle, I love you, but no.
Brundle's a better broadcaster than driver, quite frankly. sorry, Martin. Again, I love you too, man, but not for your driving ability. So, yeah, I think that's kind of a given, really. Mansell and Hill, you know, over 50 wins between them there, over the two world titles between them as well. That's a very strong team. And Mansell kind of made his name, really.
I could have got Montoya, but I didn't.
No. Like, look at the competition here. Would you really have said Montoya? Montoya was great, but not that great.
Yeah, I'd say Hill's better. Yeah.
Yeah, Montoya had a lot of potential, I'll say that much. He could, like, if he kept the lid on things, he probably would have won a world title down the road. But yeah, just no on that one. To be fair, I think that's the thing as well. We mentioned so many great drivers have gone through that Williams team at some point, so you know, that boy would be quite tricky. Ferrari.
Ooh. Yeah, Ferrari's another one of those problems where it's just massive. I guess, yeah, this is where I was going to put...
And Schumacher's... And Schumacher as well, Schumacher is off the table.
Yeah, I took Schumacher off the table and I put Fangio here. So
you're putting Fangio and Ferrari then?
Yeah.
So, Fangio and then who? Kimi Raikkonen?
Lauda.
Yes, of course. Nicky Lauda. I'm thinking, would anybody else crack that team? Because I said Fangio and Schumacher already.
The problem with Ferrari has a lot of okay drivers. They have very few great drivers. Like, yes, there's there's John Surtees, but there's John Surtees, Phil Hill, there's Ascari, there's a lot. There's a lot.
Isn't Ascari a double world champion but doesn't really get that much credit for being so?
Yeah.
It's like Nelson Piquet. Like, Piquet won three, but Piquet doesn't get the same kind of talk that Lauda does.
It's more of a recency. You tend to rate drivers who were closer to you in history higher than drivers farther back.
This is true. I tend to be the opposite, funnily enough, but yeah, that's kind of a thing. I do see what you're saying there. Diego Fernando, even.
I have Fernando on a different team.
Okay. I wonder what that could be. Okay. Dare I say, did Prost ever drive a Ferrari?
Yes, he did. That's when Senna drove him off the road at Suzuka.
Yeah, why not go Alan Prost then? Alan Prost and Niki Lauda?
You're doing Prost and Lauda? Yeah, I do. I'll do Fangio and Lauda.
Well, either way, I think it's a pretty darn good team. Because Ferrari have had just had a lot of marquee drivers over the years more than anything else.
Yeah.
So we move down to McLaren. Now there's some options here. Boy.
There are a lot of options at McLaren.
There's some heavyweight options here as well.
My lock-in for number one is Ayrton Senna.
Got to be Ayrton Senna. Won 3 titles with McLaren. Oh, you got to say Senna. But then who's your number two?
It's like, I want to put Bruce in for number two, but Bruce was never... He never had enough time to be good.
Yeah, Bruce left it too late.
It's down to either... You can go Hakkinen, you can go Nando, you can go Lewis.
Hakkinen? Do you go Hakkinen or do you go Nando? Because that's another one. So yeah, you could also, you know, quite feasibly go Lewis, you could go Hakkinen, you could go Fernando on this one, couldn't you?
Yeah, there are a lot of options. Maybe if you don't want to go for world champion, you can go with Gerhard Berger.
Berger wasn't bad.
And then we both already used Prost. Wait, no, I didn't use Prost yet.
You haven't, no.
But no, I'm not going to go Senna Prost. I think... I'm going to go Senna Hakkinen.
I'm going to go Senna Alonso on this one. I think Alonso's better than Hamilton, for what it's worth. And, yeah, I think that's a slightly stronger option than going than Hamilton. Yeah, I'm going to get so much hate for this one, I can tell already. Yeah, Hamilton, because obviously that means Hamilton is not going to be on my grid at all.
Oh, I didn't pick Hamilton either.
Yeah, so that's a thing. Whoops. Yeah, that's a thing. So moving down to the more obscure teams now, we've got Force India next, and, do you just hit their current lineup? Because I think Hülkenberg would get in here, I think.
Yeah, it's like Hülkenberg... It's definitely a lock. It's like Perez or Paul DeResta. We are really in the depths of mediocrity right now.
Yeah, we are slumming it up in the camp of mediocre as it stands.
It's like, oh, we really can't use previous teams for our 9 teams? Sad.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. I'd probably take Perez over DeResta, just about.
Yeah, I'm taking Perez over DeResta too. Current lineup.
Just take the current lineup on that one. So next you've got Toro Rosso, and the quality here drops off a little bit after Sebastian Vettel. We both use Vettel for Red Bull, obviously. So we're left with the rejects and Daniel Ricciardo. So is it obvious here, and we go John Eric Verne and Daniel Ricciardo on this one?
Wait, can we backstep for a minute? Because we forgot to mention that. Force India existed before they were Force India. They were also Jordan, Midland, and Spike.
Well, if you're going down the Jordan road, I guess you could go Heinz Harald Frentzen, couldn't you?
Yes, because that's kind of the only reason why I mentioned that.
Yeah, I guess. And to be fair, would Frentzen be better than Hülkenberg even?
I'd go Hülkenberg Frentzen, to be honest.
Yeah, French is definitely better than Sergio, if you're going down that road, yeah.
Yep, sorry, Fizzy.
Sorry, Fizzy. Like, I love you, man, and you know that, but, sorry. okay, so, Toro Rosso, is it obvious? Is it Vernon Ricciardo?
I mean, Buemi was okay.
Buemi was decent, Alguersuari was decent.
Can we go to the Minardi boys?
Even then, we've already used Alonso. Would you go Mark Webber then?
Mm.
Technically,
we could go Webber.
Even though that's definitely a stretch. I'm going to say Vernon Ricciardo for me. I'm keeping this one strict.
Yeah, I'm going Vernon Ricciardo.
Yeah, I can't really argue with that one. So, Lotus.
Oh, Lotus is interesting, because basically my Lotus, I've been playing, my Lotus is basically just going to be a Renault All-Star team.
A Renault All-Star team, so I'm guessing Romain Grosjean and...
No, I'm going with Prost Nando.
You bastard.
There was a reason I was saving them for Lotus.
Bullshit.
Go on, Prost Nando.
No. I'm not accepting this.
Why? Alain Prost drove for Renault.
Fucking shit. All right. I'll let you have that one. Just. You jammy shit. I was thinking more the modern era of Lotus, but I guess that counts.
Quote of the episode, okay. I guess that counts.
Bollocks. Hey, I've already got my tagline for the episode down, quite frankly.
Yeah.
But that would be a decent number two title. Let's have a look. I wanted to save Raikkonen for later.
I mean, what else could you use Raikkonen like?
You could easily use Raikkonen here, but I think I'm going to go Romain Grosjean. I used Alonso earlier.
Oh, I could see where you could use Raikkonen. Just remember.
See? Now you're getting the hang of this, King. Now you're kicking with gas.
For that team, you could also use Michael Schumacher, just to let you know.
You could. Benetton. You could. But I've already used Schumacher, so... You know, you give him the best seat possible, damn it.
Yeah.
Grosjean and... Because Grosjean's a good driver. He just needs a better car. Then you've got Vitaly Petrov, Pastor Maldonado, unless we're going into the previous era of Lotus.
Yeah,
you go
Nelson Piquet Jr., Nick Heidfeld.
Let's go Nick Heidfeld, because, you know, he's got to win for something, right? All right, Nick, you're in.
You can even go Heikki Kovalainen, because he drove for the team twice.
Shut up. No. I refuse to go Heikki Kovalainen. Everyone thinking he was going to be the next Brock Lesnar of Formula One.
God.
The next big thing. But no. Hey, still won a race though, because to prove the point, if you want to win, employ a Finn, right? But
if you want to win, hire a Finn. Results may vary.
Other results are available. Actual results may vary in the commercial. So Sauber.
Yeah, like I mentioned. Like I mentioned before, you could actually, since you already used Schumacher, you could have got Schumacher for Sauber, because he technically did race for Sauber.
Indeed. So you got Kimi Raikkonen for me. Do you go Felipe Massa alongside him?
Felipe.
Anyone better than Felipe? 11 race wins to his name.
It's tough. If I had to go all-time Sauber. Oh, man.
Jacques Villeneuve won a world title?
No, not Jacques Villeneuve. I already said I'm not picking Jacques Villeneuve.
Good. I'm glad.
I think I'm going Robert Kubica.
He was solid. Just, obviously, for obvious reasons, just a little bit held back.
And this is difficult. It's just a bunch of drivers I don't like. Unless you count Johnny Herbert. That's like... Oh, my God.
No. Jacques Villeneuve was one thing. Stop taking the piss now, King. Freaking Herbert. And don't get me wrong. I love Johnny Herbert, but no. I'm not accepting this on this show.
I'm just going to go Kubica, Kimi.
Yeah, I'm going to say Kimi and Felipe. But... either or works, quite frankly. So yeah, that's all your questions for this episode. Thanks everybody who sent them in.
Oh, we're not going to do the other teams?
What, Mercia and Caterham?
Yes.
Oh, piss off. Okay, fine. because you insisted, all right?
Oh, this is going to get sad.
Okay, who drives the Mauritia All-Star team? Timo Glock and Jules Bianchi?
No, Jules Bianchi and Alexander Rossi.
Oh, no, 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 no. You cannot pick a driver who is just driven in Formula One, who has not had a Formula One race.
Come on, I can't pick Rossi. Come on.
No, no, you cannot pick Alexander Rossi. I don't care how American you are.
Fine, Jules and... Oh, God. Who would be the other driver? I want to go with Charles Peake, to be honest.
Charles Peake over Timo Glock? Nah, I like Glock personally. Glock did good at Toyota.
Yeah, I'm going.
Is that your roommate again?
Yes.
Again. Jordan, getting up in my podcast game.
Yeah, I'm going Jules and Peake.
So Caterham, Vitaly Petrov and Heikki Kovalainen then?
Do I want to go wild card and be like Alexander Rossi because he was a Caterham driver too?
Oh, for God's sake. You're not willing to let this go, are you?
No, Rossi will have his day. Rossi will have his day.
Stupid friggin' American.
But oh,
I see how this is.
You see how this is. Okay, we can go.
Fine. Have Rossi.
No, I'm going to go Vandergaard.
Oh my God. You've sunk even lower into the depths of hell.
It's like I can't pick Charles Peake twice.
I guess you can't, no. So I'm gonna say Petrov and Kovalainen.
Going Vandergaard and Kovalainen.
Eh, I guess that works.
Well, you could have gone Jarno Trulli.
The man responsible for more trains than anyone else in a Formula One race in history, yeah? To be fair, Trulli was actually pretty good.
Yeah, he was... Compared to the guys in the back today, he could probably destroy all of them. Rossi could have gone Lucas Degrassi. Damn.
No! No! No!
Or Jerome D'Ambrosio.
Also, by the way, just to close the show, Pastor Maldonado is doing a Q&A on Lotus's Twitter page right now, and they actually retweeted a question asking, why do you always crash? I can't wait to hear the answer on this one.
We're definitely covering the reactions to this one.
Hang on.
This show just got a bit longer.
We ain't ending the show just yet. This is going to be good. Look, when it comes to South American drivers, you do not criticize South American drivers when it comes to their
It's a two-parter.
Part one, not always. Yeah, and so part one of two says, not always, I want to be fast, and to do that you have to push the limit and sometimes you go over it.
Oh my God, part two needs to come.
Where is part
two?
We
need part two! We're not ending this till there's a part two!
Hang on, part two is in a car that's not very stable, it's hard to get it back once it goes off. And it's not just me with a winky face.
Oh, don't throw Roman under the bus, because you were doing this since Williams.
Yeah, like, this is not a new thing with you, Pastor. Oh dear. And on that note, I think it's best if we end the show there. But as always, a big thanks to Ryan King for being on the show as always. And I hope you guys have enjoyed what's been a very entertaining podcast, a very fruitful one to say the least, and I'm going to have a nightmare editing this together because my mic has given out like 3 times in the course of this recording, but I'll salvage something. But until then, I've been Harrison. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll catch you guys next time.
Bye.
Sayonara.